as I wait, heart of God.
Hello, new life, and welcome to the Growth Group podcast, where we believe that spiritual growth happens better in circles than it does in rows. My name is David Haken, and I am joined by Jonathan Markham, the pastor of New Life Christian Fellowship here in Pacifica, California. And we record these podcasts to help you get the most out of your small group discussion each week. This week, we're continuing our series on doubt, a series we've entitled Some Doubted. And we began the series looking at the disciples' reaction to the resurrection of Jesus in Matthew 28. Then we examined three different characters in the Old Testament, or I suppose more than three with Abraham and Sarah, but three different accounts in the Old Testament. And now we're going to look at three more accounts in the New. We are looking at Peter this week, and specifically Peter's restoration and even recommission to service after his thrice denial of Jesus during that fateful Good Friday. So there's so many different characters we could choose, and Peter is so full of character. Maybe talk a little bit about what you like about Peter, what you've learned about him in your study in preparation for this sermon.
Yeah, I think, David, it's true. There are so many people we could choose, but Peter has this quality about him that so many people are able to identify him, that he's one of these people who is never afraid to open his mouth, but all he does is change feet. He has a great passion and enthusiasm, and he runs, you know, straight in, and yet he ends up falling over. And I think so often, I'm making a judgment that's not true, but I can really identify with that. You know, you think you've got it and you haven't. And I think that really, it gives us a different understanding of what doubt is. It's, you know, that doubt is, you know, where do we really believe everything that Jesus says about himself, promises us, and challenges us to? Now, there are some times when, and I think we're going to see that Peter says he does, but then his actions cause us to ask questions. And that's very real. That's a very real context of doubt, just as much as simply saying, yeah, I don't believe you.
Or even misunderstanding probably, right, is appropriate in his case in many different situations. Well, let's look at some of those in our second question. Our first question again this week is a close reading question, asking you to find some light bulbs, question marks, and arrows from our passage in John 21.
Which gives you a great opportunity to engage with things that maybe I didn't cover.
Right. Are you only really looking at verses 15 to 19 there, that section? Well, I guess it does, yeah, 15 through 19, Jesus' encounter with Simon Peter.
Yes, but I'm going to... But
you're leading up to
I'm
that.
I'm leading up to that because we need to see where, see the relevance of what happened there in context of who Peter is and how that works.
Well, let's look at some of that context. Here in our second question, we've entitled Personality. Our personalities are a result, or they result from a divine intermingling of nature and nurture. Peter certainly has his fair share of personality. Where did Peter's rash boldness serve him well as a disciple of Jesus, and where did it get him into trouble? How would you describe your personality? Maybe get some help from those in your growth group. How has this personality affected your relationship with God and others?
Great question. For the reasons that I've already said, I love to look at Peter's character. I mean, Peter, we don't know when Jesus was walking along beside the Sea of Galilee and he calls Peter. We don't know how much Peter knew about Jesus at that point. The Bible, that's another of those things that, you know, I keep on going on about, that I sort of, you know, I ask myself, why couldn't you tell us a little bit more about this? Because you get the impression that he was just, you know, he was sort of like walking past and said, here, you, come with me. And he just did.
Now, Jonathan, are you really suggesting that we should have a longer Bible than we already do?
Well, yes. Yes, I mean, I'd like, there are so many questions that I have, but I mean, the trouble is, there's an awful lot of other questions that everybody else has, so how big the Bible, I mean, it's a bit like what John says at the end of, at the end of his gospel, there. When he says, if we were to write down all the things that Jesus did, the world couldn't contain them. And then he was only here for, he only ministered for 3 years, so. But we don't know what he knew, but we do know that what God chose to tell us was that he responded instantaneously. And when you think about it, that's the sort of character that Peter had. He didn't, you don't get the impression that Peter thought for a long while before he made his decisions.
Well, there is, Luke gives us an interesting perspective on this, because Matthew and Mark, they kind of portray this instantaneous following of Jesus, but Luke has this beautiful account, which I think is paralleled, so at the beginning of Luke, with the end of John, the end of John, where Peter goes out fishing, he doesn't catch any fish. Yep. Beginning of Luke, he goes out fishing, doesn't catch any fish, and then Jesus says, hey, why don't you try the other side of the I don't believe he does say that specific detail. I think that's just in John, the end of John. But anyways, Jesus encourages him to try again in any case, and he does, and takes in a bunch of fish so much that the nets were breaking. And then Peter says this contemplative phrase before he does in fact follow Jesus. He says, he fell down before Jesus and said, depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord. And then he says, from now on, you will be catching men. Right. So there is this like recognition of his own, you know, brokenness and fallenness and need for personal transformation. So that's, I think it's very revealing about him as well.
It is. Peter is nothing if not sincere.
Even when he's wrong,
that again is a great encouragement to say we can be sincerely wrong, but we have to be willing to admit that we are sincerely wrong and sincerely change. And we see right the way through Peter's life, you see this correction that Jesus brings to him to the places where he's. But right the way through to the middle of the book of Acts, where God corrects his perception of Gentiles.
Right. Yeah.
But you see Peter respond time and time again to the correction that Jesus gives him, which again is such an example for us, an encouragement to us. Because we're all going through that process where Jesus is needing to correct us, to show us that our perception of who he is and the things he's asking us to do are sometimes incorrect. But that doesn't cause him to reject us.
Yeah, he's so willing to be molded in God's hands.
Right. And you know, that's one of the wonderful things about Peter is, you know, he does that. And he recognizes clearly. I love that passage that you've just read, and you know, he recognizes his need, and he recognizes that somehow he recognizes Jesus is able to fulfill that need. That's just a little snippet. We don't know exactly how much he knew about Jesus when he decided to follow him.
Right. I assumed he probably just thought he was a prophet.
It's so interesting, because also you've got the situation where in the traditional rabbinic relationship, the rabbi asked, the disciple asked to follow the rabbi. Whereas in Jesus's case, he asked he asked people to follow him, and they did. And so we see that in the beginning of Peter's life. Then, if we go swiftly, if we go to the point where Jesus, sort of the next, sort of, I mean, there's the. I'm trying to remember which comes first. The first, of course, I think is when they're in the boat. They're walking on water.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder how serious Peter was when he said, Oh, I'll tell you what, if it's you, tell me to come to you on the water. And I mean, I wonder how surprised he was when Jesus said,
come on, buddy.
Come on. And yet, Peter, with all his enthusiasm, steps out of the boat.
Which he does again in John 21, when Jesus calls to him from the shore, and then he strips out his outer coat and jumps into the water. Now, he doesn't walk on
water.
Right,
he doesn't walk on water. That's he probably swims.
But yeah, these little parallels in Peter's life.
But he gets out, and then but then all of a sudden, at the moment when he walks on water, he has absolute confidence in Jesus. But then he looks at the waves and suddenly doubts Jesus' ability and down he goes, and Jesus pulls him out. And then, you know, he said, and Jesus then uses, of course, that
little faith.
Of little faith. I think, you know, I sometimes think it's a little bit unfair. You know, he did try, and he did more than anybody else did. He actually gave a couple of steps on the water. You know, Peter, but again, Peter, we see what Peter's done is he said, yes, I do, and oh, no, perhaps I don't. And how often do we feel like that when God calls us to step out into something, and then suddenly we get a little bit scared with what how that's gonna work out?
Yeah, I'm sure that's a frequent experience in all of our lives. Let's look at our third question now. This one is denial and restoration. How does Peter's attitude before his denial magnify his heartbreak after? Does Peter's response to Jesus' threefold question, "Do you love me?" demonstrate a change in Peter? The Bible has some pretty intense things to say about those who deny Jesus. Can we sometimes deny Jesus implicitly by our actions, if not by our words? What does this account teach us about our many denials of Jesus in our day-to-day life?
I think that the answer to the question about implicit, I think that's a really good question. I think that's absolutely
right.
True.
Right, trying to bring some relevance to this concept of denying.
We can. I mean, maybe we don't actually say I don't know him or any of those things, but we keep quiet when perhaps we could say something, or those sorts of things. And I think that, you know, again, we see in a sense his denial was set up, that Peter's confidence that he wasn't going to do it. I think that was absolutely sincere, and I think that, you know, in a sense, there's a parallel there between what we see in Jesus, when we see Jesus with his head, his eyes fixed on Calvary and knowing where he was going, and then suddenly, you know, the human Jesus, when Calvary gets too close for comfort, says, Father, is there another way we can do this? Mm-hmm. Because, and I think that what we see in Peter is an absolute desire to do exactly what he said he was going. He said, I'm not going to forgive you. I'm not going to. And so Jesus' warning, so often this is the case, when somebody warns us that, you know, things aren't going to go terribly well, we don't take any notice because our hearts are so, we're going to do this. And then suddenly the reality of a practical situation, in his case, the reality of all of the, you know, all of these people who were intent upon crucifying Jesus, what did it mean for him? Did he mean he was going to be crucified too? What was going on there? Suddenly his fear of what's going to happen to him means that he doubts that God is going to protect him in that context. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so he says, I need to take care of myself.
Right, right. If God isn't protecting his chosen Messiah, what does it say about me?
Right.
Maybe, yeah.
And so, I mean, I'm sure that Peter, who was clearly very, very close to Jesus, he then gets to the point where, I mean, one of the most chilling verses in Scripture for me is that when it says, and the cock crowed, and the Lord turned and looked at Peter. And I just think, oh my goodness. But, you know, there have been times when in my life when I've thought to myself, the Lord turned and looked at Jonathan.
Right.
And Jonathan remembered. And that is one of the most, as I say, the most chilling verses in the whole of Scripture to me. And, you know, you wonder, you know, I mean, that Peter's must have doubted at that point, you know, okay, God says he's going to build his church, Jesus says he's going to build his church on me, and but, you know, this is all gone. And, of course, he takes the guys off fishing. So I'm going fishing. Obviously, this is, you know, I'm going back to where I was before because this has obviously all gone sideways. And yet Jesus brings him back.
So in that account where he brings them back, Jesus asks three times, do you love me? But the first time he asks, do you love me more than these? What do you take that to mean? I've read that there's three different interpretations. More than these fish or these fishing equipment? Do you love me more than the other disciples love me? Or do you love me more than you love the disciples? Perhaps that there are more understandings of that.
And yes, that question. You know, I have always thought that it meant other than, do you love me more than these people do?
I agree. Yeah.
Which
speaks so much to Peter's, because even when he promised, I will never leave you.
Right. He says, everybody else is going to leave you, but I'm not going to do it.
Oh, but not me.
Right.
So Peter's response isn't, yes, I love you more than they love you. All he simply says is, I love you. He doesn't try to compare himself to others anymore. So I don't know if I'm reading too much into that or not.
No, but I don't.
I want to try to explain that last phrase.
But I think that's the line that I would take. I mean, I've heard
that makes sense to me.
Yeah, it makes sense to me too. I've heard the others too. Mm-hmm. But they, to me, and I think that so often, you know, these things, they make sense to us in different ways. That doesn't make sense. I have to ask myself, why would Jesus make that comparison? But it, to me, as I think you're saying it does to you too, it makes sense because Peter had compared himself to the others. Yeah. That he would then say, you remember that comparison you made, Peter? Are you still going with that?
And it's a comparison that he's going to make in the very next account where he's like, well, what about the beloved disciple?
Right.
So I
exactly.
Think, and Jesus, hey,
Jesus,
okay. Don't
Jesus
worry about
obviously
him.
Says,
you just follow me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense.
But yes, I mean, I think that's true. And I think that it's, again, he asks him three times, and I'm quite sure it wasn't missed on Peter that he asked him three times and he denied him three times.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that Peter gets frustrated towards the end. Gosh, how many more times do I have to tell you that I love you? I really do.
Needed to bring that number to three. Well, this third question looks at that first question of Jesus, do you love me? And this fourth question looks at his response, feed my sheep. So, question four, restoration and future ministry. How is Jesus's recommission of Peter at the end of his ministry, a deliberate rehearsal of Jesus' commission of Peter at the beginning of his ministry? Why are Jesus' words, feed my sheep, just what Peter needed to hear at that moment? What are some of the key events in Acts which demonstrate that Peter did, in fact, feed my sheep? Have you ever felt disqualified from serving God? Where is God calling you to feed his sheep in spite of your shortcomings?
Yes, you know, I think that Jesus told Peter that he was going to build his church on Peter.
Yeah.
This is the responsibility that he gave Peter, and he said he was going to fish for men, that he was going to that all of these things were going to happen, and now it's almost as if what Peter has done is he's got to the point where he thought, well, I don't think that's going to happen because I'm going back to go fishing. And yet Jesus is reaffirming him and saying, look, you may have screwed up royally, but you're still a very important part of my plan. Mm-hmm. You're still going to be the foundation of you're still going to go out there and you're going to build my church. Mm-hmm. And you're going to feed my sheep.
I think it's at least worth considering for a moment what Jesus meant when he said, on this rock I will build my church. You know, as this is a Peter sermon, I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. You know, there are some people in the wider Christian world who will draw papal authority from this
yes.
commission of Peter and saying that Peter was the first pope, and here Jesus is commissioning him as pope and giving Peter, the first pope, the keys of the kingdom. And I haven't done my homework on this to know, you know, what some of the opinions are. Have you kind of dabbled
not deeply, but I think that, in a sense, I've always felt, and I guess I haven't done the research,
so
but I've always felt that it's what Peter's just done is he's said that I am the Messiah. He's the Messiah. And he's saying that you are leading the confession, the understanding that I am who I say I am. And it's on that rock, which you represent in terms of...
the confession of Jesus as the Messiah?
That I will build my church.
Yeah, yeah.
And that Peter is the sort of the pioneer of that confession.
Okay.
As well
so
as
it's,
the others.
It's less about building the church on Peter himself and more on building it on the confession of Jesus as Messiah, as demonstrated first by Peter.
Right. That's the way I've always looked at it. I mean, the creation of the... I mean, of course, there was no such thing as the Catholic and the Protestant Church at that point. So, I mean, I think suddenly making him a pope is a little...
Right.
a little sort of fanciful, but he definitely was, and we see it at the beginning of Acts. He was very prominent in amongst the disciples, the apostles, as they went out and preached. He was very, very prominent. The first half of the Acts focuses on his ministry.
Exactly.
And it's a ministry of enormous courage that, you know, there was this guy who denied Jesus, but his understanding of Jesus and his resurrection has transformed him. And he continues to be the leader of the early church. Peter and Paul, in a sense, Paul comes obviously a bit later, but Peter was in the forefront of the communication of the gospel.
Chapters 1 through 12. Yeah, I heard an interpretation not long ago from a church history professor, which was a little bit different and focused more on the ministry of Peter himself instead of necessarily just the confession of Peter, which I thought was interesting. And he was saying that the keys which were given to Peter, Peter used to open the door of the gospel to different people groups. So just as that table of contents verse in Acts 1:8, which says you'll be my witnesses to Jerusalem, Samaria, and Judea, and to the ends of the earth, so Peter exercised his rock-like key opening when he preached at Pentecost to the Jews, and then laid hands on the Samaritans in Acts 8, and they received the Spirit. And then finally in Acts 10, when Cornelius and his family received the Spirit, that is a group of Gentiles. So here's Peter acting in each of these instances. And Peter's role is again affirmed in Acts 11 and then Acts 15, the Jerusalem Council. So even though Peter is considered an apostle to the circumcised, where Paul is an apostle to the uncircumcised, still it is Peter who opens the door to the uncircumcised Gentiles to come into the church. So that's one possibility, and it's kind of highlighted by some of the verses that we've referenced here, at least, although not mentioned explicitly.
Interesting.
Any final words on Peter and how we can relate to this guy and his own brand of doubt?
I think it's a matter of saying, Lord, there are so many areas which we need to grow, and we need to be willing to allow God to transform our doubt into belief. And in some cases, it means admitting we're wrong.
Yeah, that's definitely Peter. Beautiful. All right, well, we have one more week in this series. Finishing with someone who we will readily associate with doubt.
Yes.
As I wait, heart of God, satisfy and sustain.